Everyone, welcome to Meet a Maker. Hi. This week we are joined by the wonderful co-host Faye. Hello, hello. And we are meeting Fred.
Hello, Fred.
Hey.
How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Still in lockdown, but all good and happy. Yeah.
I'm glad you're happy.
Busy.
This is the first week that we've had two people in the same time zone.
Yes.
I think that's terribly exciting.
Definitely very exciting.
It is good. It's, yes.
Much
it's,
easier.
It simplifies things a little bit. Imagine being three time zones. That's going to be awful.
Well, that's like, what we've been much.
That's what we've been doing.
The three time zone shuffle, and it's been very exciting. But Fred, you and I are both in the United Kingdom. So
exactly. I think I'm a little bit further north than you are, but not that
You're
much.
Definitely further north. I'm not
17
that far
miles
from like
or something
the
like
bottom.
That.
Like, yeah. Not a very big good. Country, so it's nothing's it's terribly far away.
Yes, you're like very far north, 17 miles, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure I know what a mile is. Well, that's not very far.
I think it's also a joke, but it's a very tiny island.
I haven't driven more than 5 miles in the last 7 or 8 months. So to me, 70 miles at the moment is like hours drive.
It's like forever away.
Yeah.
Okay, meanwhile, I'm jumping on a train for 3 hours this afternoon just to visit my mom. So
we could put so many Great Britons inside Australia, like probably at least like 12, maybe 20, even like so many of them fit inside Australia.
Yeah.
So.
Probably a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I'm going to Google later. I'm curious now.
Yeah, have you seen that map of the world adjusted to the non-spherical maps?
Yeah.
Where they actually show how big countries are in reality?
It's crazy. They'll
blow you away.
Actually, yes, I have.
Yeah, Australia's
now that you
been
mentioned
chipped
it, I'm like, wait
years.
A minute.
We're really big. We're as big as the USA. Like, yeah.
Exactly, because you look
the
at
only,
it and because of... They're big. They're Australia's big.
I was going to say, the only exciting bit of geography, like, comparison that I know is that Texas, as in the state of, is bigger geographically than the entire country of France.
Yeah, I believe that. Texas is pretty big. Yeah.
Texas is huge.
There's actually an image you can pull up of Australia superimposed over Pluto. That's a fun image because we, like, reach out further than it in some spots. Like Pluto the planet.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. I'm
it's
just
pretty
like
wild. And then I'm like, oh, so okay. That's why they don't call Pluto a planet. Oh, okay.
On Twitter yesterday, you know those videos that show how big things are by like showing this and then that planet. So there's a new video this year that starts with a Planck element and all the way up to the biggest black hole in the world in the universe.
Wow.
And then to galaxies and further away, and it's like mind-blowing.
That
it's
would
really
blow
cool.
my mind.
It's new video came out.
That's cool. Yeah, I definitely would check that out. That sounds awesome.
It always breaks my brain a little bit.
Yeah, it always does. Space breaks my brain.
It's quite
sizes
crazy.
I cannot compute. Nope. Just nah, we're returning a null here. So right. So now that we've had a really lively discussion about geography,
yeah.
Fred, tell us who you are. What do you make, and what are you most well known for? Kick us off.
That's a tricky question because actually I didn't know how to answer a question like that until actually last Friday when we were in, I think it was last Friday or two Fridays ago, when I was in a call with Matt in the evening.
Yeah, and he made you ask.
And he asked me to introduce myself, and I said, well, "Hey, I'm Fred. I make dioramas and props for cosplay." And it's and he ended up saying, "Well, Fred is well known for this." And I'm like, "Okay, that's it." So I guess what probably some people know me is for doing dioramas for Wexler's Minis.
Yes.
So Wexler's.
I think that's how I first became aware of you. So.
Yeah.
So
I can back that up.
That is probably what I'm mostly known for is doing that, and that's what I started, and something I still do quite a lot, and I love doing it. So
they're amazing.
Yeah, that's probably what they know.
You're really good at it.
More or less. I guess.
Well, you must enjoy it at least to have been doing it so long.
I do. I do enjoy it quite a lot. I've been trying to do other stuff, but I always end up doing new dioramas almost every other day. I've just finished one yesterday. And I have three or four more to finish this week. So,
and what What do you like? What appeals to you about the diorama making?
I think it's more how I started doing it. So I started printing Wexler's minis, and it just felt like it needed more to it. So I started making these bases, simple bases, and adding some rocks and some stuff from other things that I got on Thingiverse and other websites, or making some in Blender. And just the mini with a base. And then I went like, could I go a little bit further and make something else? Because I'm not really handy with like foam and other materials. And like me, a lot of people aren't. I started to think, well, you know, this is actually what I think there isn't out there, which is dioramas that you can actually print and it just, you know, smudge some paint on it and use with your figurines, either Wexler's minis, or a lot of these dioramas can be scaled up to other figures that fit the diorama. And that's what keeps me quite excited, is can I find new concepts or new dioramas that people can print and add to what they have in their collection of toys or other things. And, you know, he's doing a lot of minis every month, and I'm trying to keep up with those and also go for older ones that I haven't done. So I think I try and do around 4 dioramas a month.
That's incredible. In terms of room diorama.
Wow. That's a lot of output.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah, I do other stuff. So I tend to also do tabletop props.
You know, it's also really funny, because I was going to say, you're describing how you came into this, and I was going to be like, are you a tabletop gamer?
No, I'm not a tabletop gamer, but I'm not. Unfortunately, I think I didn't have, I don't know, the group of friends that would play a lot of tabletop games. Yeah, I played a lot of Monopoly, a lot of Risk and other games, but never into kind of
board games.
More miniature-based tabletop and stuff like that. But what I realized is building a diorama, you always build these, you know, little things that go along. And if they can be used in dioramas, why can't they be used in tabletop? Mm. So nowadays, I build a diorama, but also build a lot of those props, like garbage cans, ammo boxes, barriers, walls, concrete barriers, and stuff like that. That can be fitted into a diorama, but also could be used in a tabletop. And at the same time, I love doing kind of cosplay props. So you can see all of on the top shelf, there's weapons and knives and blades, and there's a Lara Croft hacks there.
I noticed that one. Yep. Great game.
So this is a tiny, small version.
Little mini one.
I couldn't print a big one, so I have some of my patrons printing a bigger version, and this is a resin version, just so I could actually photograph. I did. And I got a little bit of blood in there.
Great.
So
all in. It's a proper prop. I love it.
Yeah, so I
love the mini prop, actually. Busy. The mini prop's great.
Yeah, I've done tons of small weapons, because I find it fascinating to, you know, when you get into 3D printing, there's always that idea, buy a big printer, print big. And what I realized, actually, it's much nicer to actually print small and try to, what is it? I always
You're
love to
smart,
show these guys.
Sir. You're smart.
So these are machine guns printed in FDM.
FDM? Oh,
what?
How?
Yeah.
What?
And their legs fold.
You get closer.
What?
No.
How? Way. What size nozzle are you using? That's what?
0.4 nozzle. It's a stock MK3. Yep.
Stop it.
Dang. Yeah, I have more than.
That's incredible.
So.
Who needs a resin printer? God. Wow.
I do love printing in resin. And again, you can still do an FDM, tons of cool stuff. I actually have a couple of patrons that are, the fun we have is I make something that I say can't be printed in FDM, and he goes off and prints it in FDM just for the challenge that it is.
I know
a lot of people say to me that I do put a lot of details in the models, probably a lot more than they should, but I like doing it, so it's fun.
I'm familiar with this problem.
Yeah.
You gotta do what you love.
I'm also almost a chronic detail putter in her.
Someone was saying the other day. It is. That's the science, is to know when to stop. I was talking with a couple of people the other day, and they were saying, when do you know you have to stop? And I tend to look at if surfaces are too clean and too empty, I can't stop. When they don't look like just flat faces, then that's when I stop. And it works more or less.
Yeah.
Which is tough when you're doing things like miniatures and things that you know mm-hmm. are going to be printed really tiny. Yeah. And like there's that knowledge of, well, the detail beyond a certain point isn't going to show. But when you've got it in the 3D model form, it's huge in your computer screen.
It's not the first time. I'm doing models that have, measurements are 0.05 millimeters. Oof. And you go like, okay, you're just going to love it.
Yeah, 0.5, that's barely even, DLP.
0.05.
0.5. What's the resolution on DLP machine? I think it's 0.03 on a lot of them, isn't it?
Frozen Sonic, I do print at 0.03.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Wow. I think some can get down to 0.1, but most, I think it's 0.3.
I was meaning even the voxel size, like the pixel size, I think is 0.03 something, isn't it?
If you get a 4K screen, which I haven't actually tried on a small, because the problem is the bigger ones, they're 4K, but they're like quite big screens.
But
there are some that are still the small Photon or Elegoo size, but are 4K screens.
Mm.
Yeah, those,
of course, though, the human eye can only percept so it's like there's a point where it's there, but I can't see it.
Yeah, I actually didn't get one because I felt like if I did get one, I would be testing things that other people couldn't print, so the details wouldn't be visible. So I limited myself to actually getting a model that wasn't 4K, just so I could actually test print things as normal people would. But yeah,
kind of you, very thoughtful.
Kind of smart.
Yeah. It's not, these aren't just for me to have fun, it's for other people to have fun. So they need to be printable and people need to enjoy the details that are on the models. So
definitely. What got you into making? Like, where did you start in your creative life? Broad question.
I think the 3D printing bit is a little bit kind of more recent. Well, I'll say recent, 1999 probably, when I I didn't get into 3D printing, but I was following a lot of the 3D printing technology at that time, mainly with professional printers. I actually at that time was talking with I don't know, 3D Dimension or something like that. There was a company that was doing RGB printers.
Wow.
At that time with the power layers. And that was quite interesting, but they were like 15K to 30K for a printer. And I was like,
you 1999, yes? Yeah. To make sure I heard you correctly.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you know.
That's wild. I didn't even know we had 3D modeling software that was capable in 1999.
I knew this question would come up. I started 3D modeling when PCs were not even... it were 438, 486 PCs. So way before Pentium was even a thing, long, long time ago, when 8 megs of memory were quite expensive. So that's when I started 3D modeling.
And what got you into it then? What got you into it then? Why? What brought you into it?
I don't know. I just liked it. It was something. I had a PC. I had computers early on. I worked in the printing industry, and my family was always into computers. So when I got my first PC, I got a 3D software and I started using it.
Or if you don't mind me asking, I'm really curious.
What? Sorry?
the software that you used back then?
It was called TrueSpace. That was cool. The name of the software. I did a little bit of 3D Max. I never really liked it, but I did do some stuff with 3D Max. I guess after a while, I didn't have the time to do 3D. I did do a lot of AutoCAD because my master was in graphic design, but I also took industrial design and interior design. So I had to work with AutoCAD quite a lot. And I did work with DraftSight, which is the company that does the SolidWorks.
Gotcha.
DraftSight is an AutoCAD version by the Dassault software, and I've used it for a long time. And at one point, I went back and found that 3D printers were actually cheap enough. And I could actually say, well, you know, I could actually buy one. And if I don't like it, hey, it's not a big expense that I could just sell it on eBay. So I'll try it. I was like, what, a couple of years ago? And I did buy one. And yeah, my wife hates me since then because I've been printing like crazy.
Oh my god,
that's awesome though.
I feel like I need to know too, what was your first printer? Because like we're going over your first, we got to hear your first 3D software. What was your first printer?
I didn't want to spend too much. I knew about Prusa printers and how good they were, but at that point I knew I was able to do if I wanted 3D stuff and model 3D stuff, but I didn't want to risk it because my professional life didn't allow me to actually, you know, spend too much time with it at that time. So I bought a Creality Enderfree Creality Enderfree, yeah. I think it was. And it was great. I love the fact that I didn't have to spend a lot of money on it, and I could print things, really quality prints. Honestly, I don't think that the Enders were worse in terms of quality to what I can print on the MK3. But I started printing 24/7 for several months, and they just literally broke into pieces. I had two. I bought a second one, and that one even lost less than the first one. So I ended up actually moving to more robust printers after that.
Fair enough.
But yeah, that's
it's
how
good
I
that
got
you get them through their paces, though. You really good. Push them.
They're really good, but they are, you know, you end up with what you pay. The parts aren't meant to be running 24/7 for 6 months.
Yeah,
and I don't like hardware that is stopped. For me, a printer that is not printing is a waste of money. So I'm printing 24/7 every single day.
That's awesome. So cool. Well, considering the amount of work you churn out, that's not all that surprising.
Yeah, so it's quite hard. Like, if I'm not printing stuff, I know that I'm not going to be able to paint the dioramas, and they're going to be stopped, but and I'm not going to be able to provide
you sound
the...
so organized.
I
so
do
organized.
Have... So the guy's always joking that, you know, I miss a spreadsheet, because I do have spreadsheets for all the projects that I'm working. I plan.
I have
not
a lot of
planning...
respect for a good spreadsheet.
I'm planning March and April next year already.
Wow. How does that work? I'd love to hear more about that workflow and the way you organize. That's fascinating to me.
So if you think that I've learned 3D a long time ago, I've learned spreadsheets before Windows was a thing.
Yeah. Awesome. I love spreadsheets too. But like, what's your system? What's your... How does that work? How do you plan things that far ahead? How do you actually execute the things that you plan? I don't know. These are things I struggle with.
How do you keep
it
all organized? You know,
it's like... not that the plan always works or is followed to the letter. But basically what I have is I've committed to always doing at least 4 dioramas and props and other stuff beyond those 4 dioramas. So I list 6-7 months, and then I start putting dioramas ideas in that list, and I start building those, and I end up building way more than just 4 in a month, probably, because I just get too excited and say, okay, I'm doing this one, and I'll do another one, and do another one, and do another one. So I then start lining up dioramas according to how long they're going to take to print, paint, and finish off. And I got to the point where I think now I have November, December, Jan, Feb, and March all printed, and I just need to paint them, photograph them, and I'm already working on the months ahead. Wow. Or adding stuff on top of these months.
That's wild.
You're ahead of schedule.
I'm just sitting here in awe right now.
Well, it's not that I need to be ahead of schedule, but what I feel is like I can't actually have patrons and fail on delivering content to patrons. That's something that to me is not acceptable. And as such, I need to be working so that I will never have, you know, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. Imagine I get sick or, you know, I get kidnapped. Not sure why, but it could happen.
Well, you just want to go on holiday.
Whatever happened. I go on holidays.
Most committed Patreon creator ever.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
No, you owe your patrons the content and for the support they give you. So as such, I think I need to be doing more than just I do four and then, you know, I rest for the rest of the month. And because I like it so much and I do it just sometimes I look at something online and go, I love to do that. And then I get stuck in it. And yeah, there's a night gone and you got a new model tomorrow. Sometimes I just go so excited that I go like, where am I going to publish this? I can't, because there's a limit. People can't print 20 models in a month. It's just overwhelming. So you need to balance that out quite a lot, especially when some of these dioramas have more than 20 parts to print.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot.
So you must be able to model quite efficiently then as well to be able to.
I use Fusion to model stuff. Mm-hmm. So all of my models are done in Fusion. And I can probably some dioramas come up faster than others. Some weapons or props or tabletop stuff come out really quickly. Some models take me months. Like there's a Star Wars. I'm not sure if you've seen Star Wars. There's the Death Star and they're flying through the Death Star. So the fake moon. For those that aren't into Star Wars, I made a diorama which is the Death Star in 5-centimeter modules, and that took me a month to model or so, and like 2 months to print.
Wow,
that's incredible.
So some are bigger, and I had models that I couldn't actually even print. For example, I made a Stargate pyramid here. I made it, took me 2 months to make, and then it took me a year to figure out how to print it.
Wow.
So
oh, no.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Why? What happened with that? What happened with that?
So I added so many details that when I exported it from Fusion, it had issues that the slicers couldn't actually deal with. Oh. And softwares like NetFab or Mesh Mixer couldn't fix the model because it was too big. So it was actually in a chat online that someone gave me an idea on how to fix that model. And basically the faces of the model are split from the body so that the faces can have all the details in there. They are printed separately in resin and then they're glued to the rest of the model.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, it took me a year to get to that. And I was actually Grumpy, which is one of my friends on Wax's Discord that gave me that idea.
That's awesome. That makes
that
a lot
is really
sense.
Interesting.
Ah. Wow, you're so like maxing out the capabilities of
I like it. I like it. And I like to keep my patrons busy and occupied and give them a challenge every week or so.
Awesome.
Well, that's really impressive. Finding solutions for unexpected problems is definitely, I think, a really underrated skill that we could all probably benefit from, because
I think
at some point has a sudden unexpected problem that they didn't anticipate and are kind of like, oh, what do I do with this now?
Yeah, okay, my view is always don't discourage. If you can't fix it immediately, just park it, go do something else, and then come back with, you know, a new view on what's the issue and try and resolve it. And sometimes it's just by chance you will resolve it. So I have tons of unfinished projects, but I'll get to them at one point.
I have tons as well. So, I don't always get to them. Sorry, you can say.
Nah, I was going to say, I feel like all my projects are unfinished projects until they're suddenly finished. And it's like, oh, how nice. That's very nice.
One made it through.
I was wondering, what are some of your favorite skills, or like, do you have like a favorite thing that you've kind of learned along the way that has kind of stuck out as something that you particularly enjoy?
Yeah, I guess, you know, probably 3D modeling, or at least 3D modeling. Modeling in Fusion has never been anything that I couldn't do because of my background with AutoCAD and other software. That was fine. I guess the thing that I really like doing, and it was a challenge, was learning how to paint the models. Ooh. So I don't do multi-materials. I only print in one color, and people are joking about it. I only print light gray. I don't actually have a single other color of
filament. You know what? That makes your life a lot simpler. You don't have a mountain of plastic to contend with. Like, yep. This is, you can't see mine on the. You can kind of see the very bottom of the shelf.
On the
camera.
I've seen the pictures of the studio. But to me, it's just I don't have time to fiddle with different filaments, different settings. I just, you know, I buy them in 2.5 kilo spools. Just feed the printer with filament. Even the resin printer is like light gray filament resin, and that's it, because also it's easier to paint with.
Yeah, it's like,
because they're a neutral light color, so you can paint whatever you want with it. But I love painting the models. I'm really rubbish at painting them. I've realized the trick is actually just paint so that it looks okay-ish, and then just put some washes and make them dirty. It'll just look perfect, or at least
there's so many tricks with it, isn't there? Like, there's so many, so many really cool things that you can do. Oh, hello.
Not a cat. Yep.
Sorry, we have a guest. We have a guest. This is Mabel.
That's fine. Let him enjoy the paint. So yeah, that's the thing, that it takes a lot of time. And I think a lot of the times I look at my models and I could say, okay, I could just release these with renders and people could paint them. But the reality is it doesn't show the potential of the models and the dioramas. When I add the paint and I add the textures and the rocks and the static grass and the details to it and the light, it gives it a different look. And to me, that's the most interesting part, is transforming a printed object into something even more interesting. And
moment.
Yeah. And again, you know, been doing it for what, almost 2 years now, that I've been forcing myself to paint every single model, and also buying paints and materials, like building my own workbench and all the drawers and all the getting the bottles of paint for all the colors and washes and textures and environments and stuff like that, so I could actually do what I really want to do with the models and push them a little bit further.
What's your paint brand?
Vallejo.
Oh, that's not what I got.
I don't know. I like them. I like their stuff. And they have a lot of stuff besides the paint that I use. Actually, I have I buy them every month. And I like have their catalog. So every other week I go into the catalog and say, you know what I need? I need this one, this one, this one. And I buy like 10 or 20 bottles of paint. So now I've got a fairly good selection, so I can actually paint almost everything. But what I've realized in the last, 6 months is I needed not the paints, but the washes, the effects, the textures, the metallic paints, the gels and glazes and crackling paints and all those things that you might not buy immediately, but it gives the additional step into the painting of dioramas. And now I've been buying a lot of static grasses and rocks and pebbles and stuff like that. So, yeah.
So it's exciting.
A lot to do, but it is pretty cool. I like it quite a lot.
I love miniatures. I've always like gazed longingly at that whole world, but I know that if I start, I will never stop. Like, I will just buy all my money. Like, I just know it because it's just everything about it appeals to me. Like, tiny things and all this little perfectionist stuff and, like, you know, the grass and just everything. I'm like, I would just fall into that hole.
Well, when I started doing the dioramas, I started watching a lot of videos from Mini Bricks.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sure if you've seen it on YouTube and on Instagram. Like, just awesome dioramas with, again, static grass, resin to make the water, and like awesome things. And he prints 3D models of like spaceships and other stuff, and then puts them together, and they're like insanely detailed and pretty cool to look. So that's where I kind of always said, okay, I'm never going to be that good, but I can actually try and learn these things and force myself to do those kind of techniques to see if I can do it and how far can I take it.
And now you are. Woo! You make beautiful can do things. Some stuff. You're much too humble. Yeah. Your stuff is.
No, you know, there are people out there that are really good at painting and at doing dioramas. I'm kind of trying to do a little bit of everything and give content to people to do even further. I think it was last month. So I do this competition with patrons where they post a diorama they've printed and painted if they want to. And then we pick the top most engaged post. And then I pick the one that looks the best. And there was one patron, she posted this diorama. And honestly, the photos look like realistic. I didn't realize that actually that was my diorama until I started looking and said, oh, crap. Yeah. Because it was brilliant. And that's the thing. Like, I want people to actually, you know, do things that look amazing. And I'm just trying to give them, hey, this is an example of what you can do. Go off and build even crazier things in this. So,
yeah, definitely. That's so cool.
My goal.
Well, you're succeeding, clearly, if she's making realistic things.
Absolutely. Ooh, I broke my machine gun.
Oh, no.
Now, they're printed in parts, so you can actually assemble them.
Oh, so it's not broken. It's just
disassembled.
It's okay.
You mentioned earlier that you draw a lot of inspiration from, well, you design a lot of models around Wexter's work. Is that where a lot of your inspiration comes from, or do you have other places that your inspiration comes from too?
No. I think it depends on what I'm doing. A lot of the times what I do nowadays is I go on Instagram, on YouTube, and just look at dioramas and models and just random stuff to see what's out there and find things that probably haven't been done or combinations of stuff. Like I was doing this Mandalorian diorama, which is actually for a Wexler Mini, but also for anyone that has a figurine that's like 1/10 or 1/12 scale that wants to use in there. But I did it by combining some techniques from other concepts with that theme and then using some, you know, different ways of doing dioramas that I've seen around the internet. I don't know. I think most of the times what I do is I use Google Keep. So any photo or anything I like, I copy it and push it into my Google Keep. And then I just browse through that and just take ideas and then say, okay, this would be cool with this and with this. Sometimes I just find a random image of, especially in props, like finding a weapon that I've just, oh, that's pretty cool. I want to do that. I know I can do that. There's a little bit of a difficult part in there that I don't know how to do, but I want to challenge and do that. Or sometimes I just watch a movie and say, oh, that scene would be awesome. And so it really varies, but it's always trying to push a little bit further with techniques or with combining models. So I did a TIE fighter from Star Wars and an X-Wing from Star Wars. And I had another diorama that I had done from Star Wars. And I started thinking, well, I can actually combine these three models and make something new that people could print and build. So sometimes that happens. Waxers is always that happy place where I go back and say, I want to build dioramas for the minis. And it's just, they're always very cool models to make a diorama for. Yeah, it's something I really like doing. He's always challenging me, and I'm always challenging him to do weirder things. So.
Yeah, I've definitely seen you both do that, fire at each other and be like, you should do this, and you should do that. It's really great. Yeah, the banter is awesome.
Awesome, though, that you have this library of things now that's become so big that you're able to kind of make something and go, oh wait, I've made this other thing before that I could use with this to create a whole new thing, and like to be able to kind of have your own library of creations that you can kind of draw from to make new things. That's really impressive. I think that takes a long time.
We spoke a couple of times about Waxer, and Waxer really pushed me to do a lot of the stuff that I do, but Foltis Mint, also pushed me into other directions, and he's always saying, don't print my models, I don't want you to make dioramas, I want you to do this and this, and he pushed me to do a lot of tabletop stuff, quite a lot, and I was quite happy to start thinking about how can I make things that are not just tabletop, that can be used in multiple situations, and making modular things like walls. Walls that you can actually combine to do tabletop sceneries, but also use for other things or platforms. So when I started thinking like that and saying, well, I don't have boxes, or I don't have a pallet, or I don't have a brick, or I don't have this. So you start thinking in a way, well, where can I use this and this and this? And reusing parts for different models in different dioramas. So like the other day, I started building bases for actually dioramas where I can use other parts of stuff that I've done, like modular pipes or other systems. So, and I've been pushing to have enough of a catalog of content that you can go and say, okay, you know, you can find miniatures. There's tons of awesome artists. But if you need, I need a box, or I need a pallet, or a fire hydrant, or a wall, you know, there's not enough content out there for this. And I'm building that content so that people can go, well, you know, I can always go to and talk with Fred, and he can get me this stupid model that I won't find anyone doing it, because it's just a normal object you can find on a day-to-day scene. But I will have it, probably.
Yeah, that's so important too, because it's those little items, yeah, like fire hydrants or whatever, that really make stuff look realistic. And yeah, they're not things that people generally jump into modeling and do. So really, really valuable. So,
oh, you know what I did the other day? I did a wooden box. And you're like, yay, good. But I like doing those because actually they're useful, you know?
Definitely, 100%. Yeah.
Now, so I was thinking about like these. Built a, you know, a trash can.
Ah, so cute. It's perfect. FDM
printed. That's adorable, actually.
How are you doing this with the FDM? That's crazy.
Yeah, that's all FDM printed. You know. But the reality is, yeah, oh, great. You made a trash can. Well, but it's useful. I've done, I think, two dioramas where I use these. And I know a lot of people use them for other stuff. So, like, you could use this in a tabletop kind of sci-fi game or something like that. Or what else? I did some fences, and oil barrels.
Yeah, and so, I mean, like, people doing model trains and stuff would use
exactly.
These they just rescale them, but yeah, that sort of stuff is.
Yeah, you can rescale them, and then you can print them in resin if you want really small. You can print them in FDM, and that's where, you know, yeah, I'm no ZBrush artist, so I need to be realistic about my skills. Fusion is something I can control, and I can do stuff with it that is good for what's needed.
There's something really to be said, though, for doing the things that everyone isn't clamoring to do. Because, like you said, there are so many people making the figures, making miniature figures. It's very popular. There's so many people doing it. And so there's already so many options for that. But I guess for a lot of people, creating the props is seen as, I guess, less exciting or something. And so less people are doing it. But that means that there is this huge empty space of things that are actually just as important as the figures. They're an incredible exactly. part of the game. And yet, for whatever reason, people aren't really doing it. And so you've kind of gone, hey, wait a minute. Yeah. There's a gap that needs filling here. So that's like, I guess very, very smart.
I think, then to be honest, credit is not all mine. I guess it just built up to the point where I realized there's, first and foremost, dioramas, there's very little amount of work being done with dioramas that other people can print. There are some issues with doing dioramas for other people's models, which means people that want a diorama also have to have that model. So there's a little bit of a problem there. But with the tabletop and with the props, you know, I'm fine. I'm happy that people want to have them and need them. And it's about finding the market that fit, that you can have something to useful for. Because otherwise, you'll just be diluted in the amount of things already being created. And at the end of the day, you also need to know where your strengths are and where, you know, you can actually make something useful. If you know, if, it would be stupid for me to try and do, I'm going to do busts or figures when I can't model in ZBrush and I can't do anything good with it, but I can actually do stuff in Fusion that works and satisfies people's needs. So some needs.
No. I think you've approached all of this in an incredibly, incredibly smart way, and what you created has been absolutely amazing. And just nobody else is really doing it. Like, nobody else is really doing it. So your stuff kind of really stands out. And that's always such a nice thing. Like, you
I hope
are,
so. I hope
you
then.
Are the diorama guy, you know? Like, you're the person doing this. No one is really doing it. So
yeah,
like,
that's why I always say I don't want to stop doing dioramas. I do a lot of props and a lot of things that are standalone, but I love doing dioramas. And again, it's why I started it. And it's what I think I'm okay-ish at, and I like doing, which is okay, dioramas. Like, sometimes I wish I could add models of my own and do stuff, but I think, yeah, well, you know, I can build these things that people can use with other figurines. And again, it doesn't need to be limited to 3D printed figurines. I've seen a couple of people using my dioramas for actually 1/12 scale models, and they work fine.
Commercial figurines.
Exactly.
Why not? Exactly. Why not?
It's just scale them up and print them. And they're easy prints. Like, these things don't need mostly a lot of supports. So they're easy to print.
I love it.
Well, I'm still waiting for the day that you decide to do a Kill a Kill diorama so that I can put my...
I know. I have it on my Google Keep. Because when we spoke about it, I took notes. I do keep everything in Google Keep, because otherwise I'll lose track of ideas and concepts and requests.
Full shelf. You know, it would be the whole shelf, but I don't even care. Like, it
no, as soon as I get over some of the models I'm working on at the moment and I start having some time, I will have a look.
That's awesome.
I'll reach out and get some more references.
You heard it here.
That's awesome. I'm always
happy to do collaborations and work that actually people enjoy doing and going a little bit out of my comfort zone with other models that I'm not too familiar with. So.
Maybe I can actually finish painting the second model by the time it's done.
It'll all fall into place, I'm sure.
So I was going to skip. I realized we kind of already, talked about your workflow. So I was actually thinking that we can kind of skip the next official question because we've kind of already gone over it, which kind of means that the next thing is your struggles. We've definitely talked about your successes and things that you've learned. But what's some of the biggest struggles you've found kind of in your learning to make things and in your making adventures?
So I was not long ago, I think it was one of the chats we were having, we're talking about softwares. And again, I come from a CAD background. I've always been into CAD. So to me, it was really difficult to find the software that I was happy using. So I've tried You know, I tried the Blender, I tried ZBrush, I tried Onshape, I tried Fusion, I tried SketchUp. I didn't try Tinkercad, but I tried several of them. And the biggest struggle was find something that I felt comfortable with that also allowed me to do a lot of things. But at the same time, knowing the limitations of the software, like Blender is awesome for certain purposes. But for me, when I have to start, okay, well, this is 1 centimeter, 10 millimeters, and that's 0.5 millimeter, and I want it to be precise because that's my background in AutoCAD, Blender was something I struggled. I did some models, but I've never actually shared those models because I don't think they're printable in the quality that I think is necessary.
So yeah, that was polygonal modeling is not built for that kind of precision.
No. But then again, ZBrush, you can see people doing crazy, awesome things with it, and there's no measurements to it. So I think my biggest struggle, and I think a lot of people struggle with it, is understanding what is the best software for what you're intending to do and your skills. And that is a difficult thing because people talk, oh, I should do Blender, or you should do ZBrush, or you should do Fusion. They're not even comparable. They're not the same thing and have different purposes. So understanding which one fits best, your style, your content is really important. And that was my first struggle when I wanted to progress further.
You're definitely funny enough. There. Like that was every second question when I was moderating the subreddit. That was like, what software should I use was every second. It's why I made that poster actually, like which software you should use and why it's designated by like what you're trying to achieve. Because you, like you said, exactly. It's so different. Like, yeah, you wouldn't use Blender for something you want to use Fusion for something you would use ZBrush. They're totally different. And
they're not interchangeable.
When you're first getting into it, it's really hard to understand those differences and all that sort of stuff. And you're not alone in that struggle to find the right software.
And then there's the added complexity that you get certain softwares where, and I find it awesome because it seems like the developers of that software just said, just throw the rule book away. Let's build something completely different. And that's what happened with ZBrush and Blender. They're completely in different worlds, and Fusion, which is the traditional kind of software like you see in Adobe and Autodesk software, like those ZBrush and Blender are like, whoa. And now Blender is a little bit better, but the first iterations that I've used, my God, it blew me away. So there's some complexity there. The funny thing is I've got to a point where I was doing a lot of dioramas and a lot of stuff. I was always flat, very little details on the surfaces. And I was like, this is annoying me. So actually, Wexter, one of the nights where we were on Discord chatting, he actually taught me how to use ZBrush, but not trying to. So my view is always don't try to learn everything and do everything at once. So I know Fusion. I know how to do things in Fusion. So what I started doing is adding details to my Fusion models in ZBrush. So I learned some basic stuff that he taught me, and he's brilliant at teaching someone not as smart as me how to use the software. And okay, I got the basics. So I now got on a workflow where I can bring Fusion models, parts into ZBrush, sculpt details into them, and export them back into Fusion, and they're perfect prints. Mm-hmm. Because I know that they're going to be perfect prints in Fusion, so I can just need to add the details in there and then export.
It's such a powerful workflow. So and then I can push myself. Yeah. Like to be able to, and I've done it a couple of times and I'm like, oh, wow, this is so cool because now I've got organic and functional going on the same. I know Luby3D also does it a lot. She'll like make something in some sort of CAD and then ZBrush and then it all works. Like it's functional and it's pretty.
It works.
Yeah. Not that functional things aren't pretty normally, but like, yeah, but like you can sculpt it organically, I mean, yeah.
So basically when you're printing, you know, when you're making a model in Fusion, you export it as an SDL. If you make, so let's say, pick an example because this is a good example. Okay, so I made this small diorama. Yeah, aww. All these parts were done in Fusion, but they were just flat faces, square. Like this rock was basically something just sloped to the front, and then I just made another shape that was cutting into this rock. Okay, but I had no details. There was no edges on these rocks. And basically what I did is, okay, I prepared everything for print and I exported these out of Fusion as STLs. Yeah, no science there, just normal stuff. And then I brought them all into ZBrush the thing is, when you bring stuff into ZBrush as STLs, you will keep the sizes as they come in. It won't change anything. Okay. It'll be the same exact size, which means if you work on this as a whole and import all the models, all the parts into one ZBrush project, you can work on them and then export that STL again, and they're exactly the size that you made them in Fusion. And if you have parts that intersect, you can actually cut the bits that are, you know, overlapping, so they print perfectly. So that's a flow that works fine for me, because I don't have too many challenges at once, because my little brain can't cope with that. So a bit of an improvement every single day to make me be able to do a little bit more. So adding some textures there, you know, making some damage, adding some bullet damage, some cracks, some this and that, and improve that flow. So I think software has been my biggest challenge, because I still can't model anything in ZBrush from start, but I can bring stuff into Fusion and add details to it.
How do you turn it back into a solid when you bring it back into Fusion after you've done the details in ZBrush? Because when you export from ZBrush, it's an SEL.
It's a full, a fine, full object. Sometimes there are issues.
But it won't be parametric anymore. It's a mesh.
No, it's not parametric anymore. But at that point, it doesn't matter anymore, because the other problem is, if this workflow, you have to make changes to the model, good luck, because you have to go through the whole thing again.
That's what I was wondering.
There's no way back. Because again,
you're getting it back into a parametric model. Like, no, please tell me your secrets.
There are ways where you can turn a model back into parametric. If you use
binary, I have done it. It's a pain in the ass, though.
Yeah. But at that point, I don't need it anymore, because again, all of the work needs to be done so that when you exit Fusion, your file is ready to print and will be, you know, you have the clearances set, you have the pins in there, because I always have pins so that people can align the parts properly and fit them properly. So all of that needs to be done. You have to have the parts split so that you know exactly what you're printing and what parts are printed and how they're going to be oriented. That all needs to be sorted, but you can add the details in ZBrush and then export it back again.
Thanks to you, Fred. I'm going to make my base mesh in Fusion, because I'm used to making my base mesh either just in ZBrush or in some sort of polygonal modeling software like 3D Studio Max. I've never actually thought to combine Fusion and ZBrush, because for whatever reason in my head they're kind of like very separate things. Like, you know, like they're different types of models, different types.
So good example.
I like this. I like this.
Sorry.
This is Galaxy Brain.
Something that I really didn't want to do. And then Wexer and others said, no, you have to do it. You have to do it. And I started doing it. And you see, there's all of these details, all of these bricks, all of the.
That's good.
But all of this was done in ZBrush, except for the structure of the tower that was all done in Fusion. And it was done so that it can actually be printed with no supports. So I've done all of this in Fusion.
In the doorway. And exported. Great.
Yeah, yeah. And it has stairs that go. Oh, you can't. Wait, I'll turn on the light.
Oh, it's got light. Oh, what? That's so cool. Oh, I love it.
And there are stairs. The stairs go all the way up.
That is so that's cool. Fantastic. Can it be used as a dice tower? Could you?
So initially, some people weren't very happy with it. It was supposed to be a dice tower, but the problem is it's too tall, which meant I couldn't actually fit it at full scale in the Prusa. And the problem is the dices don't fit on the top. So I actually made a second version that doesn't have an interior, so they can be used as a dice tower.
Gotcha. That's so gorgeous. Cool. I love it. Yeah, the technique but that's is the awesome. Kind of stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah, you've definitely expanded my mind. Tonight,
just try it. And again, it's no science to it, but it's something to try.
And I will tag you. We'll tag you in a tweet and be like, "Fred taught me this, and now I have Galaxy Brain."
Don't spread rumors, because if people start thinking I can actually teach something, no, that's not good.
Already have.
Too bad. Damn it. That's awesome.
No,
oh my god.
No.
So
that was that.
Oh, sorry.
Yep.
No,
go.
Okay. I think, yeah, so with the we were talking about challenges, and I think I interrupted you earlier on because I think you said software was your main challenge, and then I think you said there was another one. Was that? Did I interrupt you? Or
No. I think it's just learning your limitations. I think I've learned, probably not with 3D printing, but seeing that I'm almost 100 years old and getting old. I'm not as old as Shane. This is like 2,000 years old.
This is a throwdown. You've thrown down the glove.
Yeah, we always like to kind of keep that banter. But yep, I've learned that, we need to always try. I think the biggest failure people have is they go in and they say, I'm going to learn this software and do everything. And they try and have big goals, but they don't turn them into manageable chunks. And then when they find the first obstacle, it's a tiny obstacle, but it means that they can't do that big thing they want. And then they fail that and they get disappointed. So I think my biggest...
Faye and I are both like nodding. Yes, I understand this.
And again, that comes from my professional day-to-day stuff is to break things down into manageable chunks that people can build and work on and make them consumable. So that was one of my big struggles, was even before getting into 3D printing, saying, I want to do that. I want to do this thing. And then, I can't. I give up. And with this, like even with ZBrush, I'm not going to make the mistake of I'm going to model Batman or whatever model in ZBrush, because I know I'm going to fail. So I'm going to start little and say, okay, I'm going to do this and then do that and then do further, and trying to every day learn a little bit. I think
the Ira Glass problem all over again.
The what?
This is the Ira Glass problem. This is my favorite quote to refer to over and over and over again is the idea that for a very long time our tastes and our desires and our skills don't match up. And like you're saying, Fred, it's very frustrating, and you find yourself, your taste is good. You know what you want to be able to make, you know what you want to be able to achieve, but for a while your skills aren't there. And so you have to just keep going until they start to meet up. There's a whole quote to it. It's very nice.
Yeah.
I can't give any credit for it. I just mention it all the time.
You need to understand that to be good at something, it takes hours, thousands of hours. And there's a couple of books that talk exactly about how professional athletes and artists have spent
10,000 hours or something. I think it's the
more than 1,000 hours, I think.
10,000.
And then you can't just expect to go in and say, I'm going to do that. I'm going to nail it. No, you're not. So lower, your objectives and break those down, because otherwise like I didn't start making a pyramid or this or the holy grenade or any of these dioramas. And when I look at some of the models that I have when I started, it's like no comparison. So
looking back in your old work.
Yeah, I still have some of my first models in dioramas over there. Yeah, keep everything.
It is good to hold on to these things, and it is good to reflect occasionally. But also, when you do it, you're always like, cringe. Look at what I did.
You try to put as much effort in it as possible, and be humble about, you're no Picasso, and people will like the work that you do for what it is, and if they like it and support you, then you grow with them. I guess
then
that's
you're
it.
Winning.
Yeah, exactly. We're all winning.
That's lovely.
This is like wholesome.
It is very wholesome.
It's nice.
It's lovely.
Thank you.
It's wholesome content. It's very nice. You're very wise, Fred. You have some good wisdom.
It comes with age, I guess.
Stop it.
I think it comes from
experience. Remember, you're not as old as Shane. It's fine.
No, I know, but I'm getting there. I think it just comes from experience of doing things and doing them several times and learning from those mistakes, I guess. And then teaching, people how to do those things, and you know, having kids and having to teach them that life is always kind of challenging and you have to always practice and practice. So this applies to everything. I tell my daughter when she's playing Fortnite or Minecraft, no, you have to practice, otherwise you're going to not succeed at it. So it's the same thing.
Thanks.
Oh, sorry. You cut out there. What was that?
Practicing sucks.
Yeah.
Nobody likes, enjoys the practicing bit. We all just want to be good.
Immediately.
Yesterday. And like, no practice.
No, yeah, but like, that doesn't work. That's just in the movies.
Not realistic.
Can I just montage it, you know, just like snippets and then boom, I'm an expert.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, but that's what people think, and it doesn't work like that. Yeah,
definitely. Mm-hmm. It's such an important message.
Not at all.
Gracious, no. Oh, my goodness.
So, I was just going to say, you've talked a lot about Patreon as we've been talking, and I was just wondering how you got into that, how you found it. Like, because there's probably a lot of people watching who would, like myself included, to be successful on Patreon. So like, and also like in generally, how do you make money from the things you make?
Okay, so my model started, I was offering the models. I was giving them away. And again, as all of this stuff, Waxer and Fotis are, you know, responsible for all this. And open a patron, and I did, and I'm saying, well, I'm not getting anyone, and of course, like, most of the people that do support me are people that were with Waxer's patron that liked the diorams that I was doing, and they've been supporting my work for a long time. I have not set up Patreon to stop working on my day job. I did set up Patreon as a way to help fund the material and the equipment that I have to buy, and the material I have to buy every month to print all this stuff and paint them. That was the intent and is the goal. And so far, you know, I'm not successful. I'm a happy bunny, as I usually say, because I have people that like to support me, and they are there to support me and advise me and give me ideas and criticize. And challenge me on a daily basis, and I give something back that they, hopefully they like. And like every time I make a change on Patreon and I ask them, because I think one of the things people have a lot of concerns, and I have the same concerns, is can I change Patreon? Can I change tiers? Can I change what I'm doing? And every time I ask them, the only answer I get is do whatever you like. And if they like it, I will keep on doing until they don't. And I, you know, and then that's because I've done something wrong, I guess. I sell my models on a shop. I have a Patreon. Patreon is where I offer a lot of models that are exclusive. A lot of the models that are made just for people that support my work. The shops are where I sell stuff that is more related to tabletop and props and others, because those are, you know, things that people will want, and I think it helps also offset the costs of buying filament every month, so like 10 kilos or something like that, resin, paints, and, you know, keeping the printers running, or buying resin printer. Yeah, tons of things that are needed in order for me to deliver all the models that I set myself to deliver. And then there's a lot of, you know, a lot of hard work, I guess, into not only, because this is what I've said since the beginning. Don't try and set up a Patreon with the only intent of getting money from people if you're not willing to go through and deliver on content and more that people will want. Because otherwise you're going to fail miserably, you know. It's not about you. That will come later if you're building content that people want and like, and that you are doing something that people want and enjoy. So, you know, I don't have 5,000 patrons. I have enough patrons to keep me happy that I have people that want to print the stuff that I do. And I give back as much as I can, like with competitions, with discounts for the patrons and things, so that it's not about them giving me a monthly fee. It's about them supporting my work, and I'm giving back as much as I can in either models, discounts, or competitions.
Sounds like you've got a really active Patreon community as well. Like your patrons, it sounds like, are very active, and that's actually really valuable, because Patreon's a bit of a weird place sometimes where you'll have
so it's weird
there, but they're very quiet.
I'm in a weird position, because being that I'm Waxer's patron, and I've been a Waxer's patron for 2 years, and I'm on his Discord every day, and every day we have Discord video calls and we talk, and you know, a lot of my patrons are also patrons on his Discord. So it's sometimes like we're all talking, and it doesn't matter which patron it is. And like, I've shared diagrams with him, he shared models with me. And that is a different proposition, I guess. Yeah, so you know, it's not that they're combined, it's that I'm leeching on his community more than...
not leeching. There's no leeching involved. They're consenting.
Yeah, they're consenting. but yeah, it's fun, and I think we always have fun, as both patrons are quite similar, but sometimes they are not, and we just talk about the differences, and sometimes people want and go and get that model or share stuff. It's quite cool, and I always said, show me models, even if they're not mine, that you made. I want to see what you're making. You know, in Patreon, I want to see what you're doing. I want to have fun. I share like daily what I'm working on. And yeah, I try as much as possible to keep people active.
Fostering a relationship. It's really
Yeah,
good.
And it's important, you know, even if it's just talking crap and not saying anything useful, but just saying and showing stuff just for the fun of it, or doing weird things, like just to keep people engaged and happy that they're...
Awesome.
You know, have really some good places to talk.
Yeah, it's very community building. Yeah.
That's really, really nice.
I guess go.
No.
That's it. I guess, you know, there's a lot more to talk about selling and how to sell and shops. I
could do a whole talk on that.
I actually have a topic. I have done a lot of support on people that have open shops on Etsy. And help them set up their analytics and their statistics and spreadsheets and
other reports. Yeah, no, I want your spreadsheets. I want all your spreadsheets. Yeah, well,
but it's hard, but it's satisfying to see that you're able to deliver stuff.
Definitely.
Well, I want to know if there's something you've done that you think deserved a little bit more recognition than it got, something that you want to kind of have a second chance to be like, hey, this thing is awesome, and y'all should see it. Though maybe you wouldn't say y'all.
I don't think there's a model that I think, oh yeah, damn it, I didn't get enough recognition. I think you get as much recognition as you can by the who you are and the community you're in and the people that know you and how good the work is. So I'm quite happy. Like, I guess when I launched, released the Stargate Pyramid, David Hewlett tweeted it.
That's so
and cool. I'm like, my Twitter was going like, boom, boom, boom. I was like, that was fun.
You're done.
Yeah, made it. That's it. Closing shop tomorrow. But I never feel like, this didn't get enough recognition. I feel like sometimes it's weird to see that some models or some themes that you make don't have as much interest as others. But that's not because I'm unhappy that they didn't get it. It's just me trying to understand what people like more. Like, for example, Sonic, I made a Sonic diorama. It is actually one of the models that we had more positive reactions on social networks compared to others that I've felt like, oh, this is awesome. And I got like, wait, what did Sonic actually is more interesting? And then trying to understand who to whom it appeals more and those things.
It's always such a mystery. Yeah. I found that on Reddit. It's like the weirdest things would take off. Like, you'd throw something together in the afternoon and it would hit the front page. And I'm like, why? And then other things I worked really hard on and thought was really cool. It was just like, eh. And I'm like, it's so interesting. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. But I don't get disappointed, I guess. I do what I like.
Mm.
And I sometimes like things that are probably a lot of people won't. And I like the challenge of making always new things. Like I did the Bat Cave, and it was the first project I did with ZBrush in Fusion. And yeah, it was, I really liked the model. It was not a, oh my God, but I liked it. So I feel happy by doing it. And the recognition is something that I'm not getting disappointed by.
Just a bonus.
Very I'm not, zen. Very I'm not, zen.
Listen, I'm no famous 3D modeler to expect people just, Fred made a new model. So there's no reason to get disappointed, I guess. So I'm happy if people print it, that's it. If people print a model, I can see at least one person has printed it, and I go like, yay.
That's very cool.
That's the only thing I would like to see is people. I know a lot of people buy models or download the models, and a lot of times I'd like to see, show me your prints.
Yeah. Just so it. I can that's, see. That's the best bet, I think.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think that's when you see, okay, I made something and someone else printed it and enjoyed making it.
Yeah, it's magical. I completely agree.
That's the only thing I need to really be happy that someone was enjoying doing a model and painting it. There was this week on Twitter, someone was posting that they were printing the Leoric from Heroes of the Storm in World of Warcraft that Photismint made, and I made a diorama, which is a throne for it. And he printed both the model and the diorama, and he posted it and said, oh man, this is my new challenge. I printed this, now I want to paint it. And I sent him some samples of other people's makes and paint jobs on that model. And he was like, oh yeah, I'm going to do it. And he showed some pictures today, and I was like, yeah, that looks really cool. And that's what, you know, makes me tick.
I love it. You're so wholesome, Fred. Hearing you talk about it. It's just so lovely. I'm sitting here going, oh, it's lovely. No. It's a beautiful thing. Me yeah.
So it's my sales speech. I'm sorry.
No, you're just really wholesome and chill, and it's lovely. It's lovely. You love to see it.
Yeah.
You love to see it.
I'm loving it.
Thank you.
So what's there you go.
No, I'm just getting embarrassed. So
okay, next we won't make you too red. What's next for you? What's coming up in your world? What are you working on, and what do we have to look forward to? If you can talk about it.
I don't know. Oh well, I, as I said a couple of minutes ago, I'm finishing off the Mandalorian diorama for one of the Rex's old minis. I'm trying to make some more kind of models that, like the Haunted Tower, can be printed with no supports and that kind of fit in a different style of models. But I see a lot of people like printing things that are complex, that can use MMUs and print complex things, but as one single piece. To challenge a little bit their printing skills and their fine tuning of the printer. So I'm trying to do that. I'm going to model a full windmill as my next project. And I want to get that done for hopefully a couple of months and it'll be released. And then trying to paint a lot of the weapons and dioramas that I have. I have, I think, around 20 dioramas to be finished. Dioramas or props to be finished in the next couple of months.
Amazing.
I don't know. Sometimes it's just an idea comes along and I say, I need to do this. I'm doing some work with other makers, like Fernando, DSK.
Yeah.
We're doing some simple things, like he's providing me some models, I'm providing him some models for a new diorama that I'm working on. And God knows, I don't know, world domination, I guess that's what I
yeah, all of the things, apparently.
Absolutely challenge. Perfect. Yeah, hopefully. And make more, I have next month I'm doing a kind of themed month around famous movie places in dioramas. So I'm doing, like, I've actually finished the Ghostbusters one, which is the headquarters from Ghostbusters. I'm doing a Hellboy one. I'm doing the Mandalorian. I have Leia from Star Wars Diorama, also a couple more. And then I'm trying to finish a couple more props for cosplay. I'm doing Weapons Month in Jan. And I'm also doing a new diorama for that. And then in Feb, I'm planning on doing just spaceships. I have a big project that I've started almost a year ago that I haven't added the details to it. That is actually quite big spaceship that I want to finish.
That's exciting. Ugh.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then again, this is just what I'm trying to do. Well, not counting with new models that I will be planning. But let's see what happens. I don't know. Still early days, I guess.
Love it.
Well,
love it,
if people wanted to see these incredible things you're making, where could they find you?
So, very important information. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. If they search for Fred, instead of an E, they put a free, like in 3D. So FR3D, they can find me on Twitter and Instagram. And I have my own blog where all the links are available. It's called the3dprinting.co.uk. And from there, you actually have access to Patreon, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Reddit, all of those places. And also have all my catalog available for you to see there. Because there's, I think 107 models as of yesterday available.
Wow. So. Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot there. And I try to put also community, everyone that prints a model that sends me a picture or I find it online, I've added to my blog. So there's tons of photos of people's makes of my models to see. Cool. So yeah, there's a lot there.
That's so cool. Oh, lovely. Well, thank you so, so, so much for joining us. This was lovely and very wholesome.
My pleasure.
Sharing all your wisdoms with us. And yeah, I feel
like. Oh my God.
So much wisdom. And I feel like I know you so much better now. Like, I'm so happy that you were able to join us because, like, this is the way of the internet, isn't it? There's so much more to you than you just see in, occasional Twitter posts or Instagram posts.
Yeah, I guess so.
Why the show is so important. You get to know
I feel like when Shane did those 24 hours and we were able to talk and be online at the same time, it was always really cool. And, Billy, I tend to see you more often on the Friday streams, which are also quite cool. And that's why, actually, although it's really late in the UK.
Yeah, I'm always zonked by then.
I love it because it's a chance to talk with people in the makerspace that you don't have often, especially like now when we're all stuck at home. It's really hard, but the technology allows us to talk. And it's my honor to. You know, when you guys said, "Oh, do you want to come and, talk with us?" And I say, "Yeah, yes." Yeah.
Well, it's our honor too. This has been absolutely wonderful, and thank you
so much.
Thank you.
I hope I didn't digress too much. So
no, I love it. That's what we're here for.
You're fantastic.
Yeah, great, wonderful. Thank you.
You're a good speaker. You're
definitely.
Good
speaker.
Thank you
for coming on with us.
Yes,
no
thank
worries.
You for sharing your wisdoms with the world.
Not sure what the world's going to think about that, but let's see.
Well, we'll find out. And thank you for everyone for watching, and I'll pop all our socials in the below, so support us all on Patreon so we can keep doing cool things. And see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye. Cool. Oh, that was great. I am loving making this series, and if you are too, please support me on Patreon so I can keep making more. Top supporters will appear in this list of legends. You can meet another maker here, and here's a video YouTube thinks you'll like. If you want to catch up with any of us, all our socials are in the description below. See you later!